You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is the Locked On Jets podcast for Thursday, October 15th, 2020, and our show today is brought to you by Pepsi, made for football watching. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. In a little bit, I will be joining Kyle Krabs of Locked On Dolphins to talk about Week 6, Jets versus Dolphins, this Sunday. It's our weekly crossover Thursday show. But first, we'll talk about the New York Jets news from Wednesday. And if you were looking for any sort of information about what happened between the Jets and Le'Veon Bell, you did not get it, because the Jets went out and stonewalled on Wednesday. Adam Gase provided no useful information. He said, "This was a consensus we came to last night when speaking of the Bell decision. We spoke with him. For us, we felt it was best we part ways. Gives him an opportunity to go somewhere else. It was a tough decision to make, but we felt like it was the best for us." Gase was asked repeatedly about whether he felt that he did not use Bell correctly, and he said it was irrelevant multiple times. The Jets did not make Joe Douglas available for an interview. They did not make Christopher Johnson available for an interview. The Jets gave us nothing. The Jets told us nothing yesterday. And you might say, well, what difference does it make? It doesn't really change anything on the field. And you know something, you have a point if you say that. But at this point in time, the way this Jets franchise is run, after you make a move like cutting Le'Veon Bell, considering how upset the fan base, rightly upset the fan base is, with the team 0-5 and playing uncompetitive football, and the fan base wondering, much of the fan base wondering, what is going on? Why would you cut one of the few players on offense with any sort of talent? Especially when the move seemed to be driven by a head coach whose job status is up in the air right now. I think that as a fan, you might say, you know, the Jets might want to convey what happened here. The Jets might want to explain to their fans, because right now there's a lot that their fans should not be happy with. And the fact the Jets don't even respect their fans enough to give some sort of information. You know, I very rarely criticize a team, the leadership of a team, the head coach, the general manager, the owner. I very rarely criticize them for what they say to the media, because again, it really does not impact what happens on the field. But in this situation, where you have shown so little regard for your fans, where you have put an unwatchable product on the field and insisted that the fans don't get it, the fans don't understand that this coach is good, we'll see. The fans should not be that upset. That's what Chris Johnson said after week one. The team's going to be better. And your predictions have proven to be so wrong. The fact that you don't even respect the fans enough to come out and explain why you made a move that did not seem like on paper it needed to be made. I don't understand what's going on with this franchise right now. And it begins at the very top, but it goes all the way down to the head coach. I don't get it. In other news, there actually were a few positive developments when we're talking about injuries. The Jets designated a few players from injured reserve to return to practice. Cameron Clark, Arthur Mallett, and most notably Denzel Mims, who has not played yet this year because of hamstring injuries. He suffered a hamstring injury in training camp. Then he apparently sustained injuries to both hamstrings prior to the week one game against Buffalo. Mims at least returned to the practice field, although Adam Gase was noncommittal about whether he would be ready to play on Sunday against Miami. And I think the other big news is that Breshad Perriman was back at practice yesterday. He had not practiced since week two. He suffered an ankle injury against San Francisco, and he's back at practice. The Jets also have ruled Sam Darnold out of Sunday's game, which I guess that's the real big news. So Joe Flacco will make another start. No great surprise, but means we have another Sunday where we have to watch Flacco, so that's not great. And Mekhi Becton and Alex Lewis both missed practice with shoulder injuries, so the Jets have a couple of starting offensive linemen whose status we'll need to watch this week, especially Becton, because Becton has obviously missed some time already with this shoulder injury. So that's the news from Wednesday for the Jets. Ahead here on our show, we're going to talk with Kyle Krabs of Locked On Dolphins. Kyle will lead us back in. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi.
Kyle Krabs of Locked On Dolphins, John Bushko of Locked On Jets, the Locked On crossover series. We do these every Thursday, and we are back once again. AFC East clash. John, glad to hop on with you. Glad to talk some football with you. Jets, Dolphins, this was not when we planned on having this little get-together between the two of us, but first and foremost, it's great to talk with you again, man.
Yeah, Kyle, it's great to be chatting with you a few weeks earlier than we were expecting.
Listen, nothing gets my heart racing quite like Jets week. And I'm sure you guys, you know, obviously the Patriots are a different breed. But this little AFC East divisional rivalry has been a fun one, and it's kind of had its ebbs and flows back and forth. John, the first thing I want to ask you, with the Jets coming to town to play the Dolphins in Miami this week, I had a listener ask me this on my mailbag show last week, and I really enjoyed it. And I would like your perspective on this. The New York Jets beat the Miami Dolphins in week six, if blank. What do the Jets need to have success in this week specifically, in your mind, that would set them up for success against Miami?
You know, I'm not trying to be funny right now, but I just have a difficult time seeing this Jets team winning a game at this point in time. This is not a Jets team that's shown an ability to do anything well this season. They're going to be entering this game with Joe Flacco at quarterback. And, you know, Flacco's had a great career, but he's not really been that effective the last couple of years. Sam Darnold's out with a shoulder injury. The Jets are entering this game. They are in total disarray. The locker room is a mess. As you guys may have heard, there was a little situation with a back named Le'Veon Bell, who is now a former member of the New York Jets. So that means Frank Gore is going to be the lead back for the Jets. And like I said with Flacco, Frank Gore has had a tremendous career. I have a lot of respect for him. But head coach Adam Gase thinks that Frank Gore is still the player he was 10 years ago. And he's just not. He's not a lead back anymore in this league. You look at the wide receiver position, the Jets may be getting some guys back. Breshad Perryman's been out since week two. He practiced on Wednesday for the first time since he suffered an injury in that game against the 49ers, so he may be coming back. Rookie Denzel Mims is off injured reserve. He has yet to play this year. The Jets may be getting a little healthier at the wide receiver position, but it's not a great group there. Chris Herndon's been a big disappointment at tight end. The offensive line's just okay. The entire defense has really been a mess this year without Jamal Adams. If the Jets need to play essentially everything needs to be different for this team than it's been through the first 5 weeks of the season. I mean, this has been one of the worst five-game starts I can remember any NFL team having.
And you know, John, I think I remember seeing the statistic that the Jets are just the fourth team in quite some time to have lost each of their first five games by multiple scores. So what, in your opinion, obviously Joe Douglas has come into the picture for the Jets a little later into this current regime with Adam Gase. What's the biggest issue for the Jets? Has it been past decision makers, and whether that's Mike Maccagnan's fault? Is it the coaching and the lack of discipline? How do you feel? Is it an organizational thing? How did the Jets get to this point where year two of a regime, with Adam Gase. They really struggled to surround a young quarterback in Sam Darnold with pieces to kind of help them answer a question that they really need to have an answer to by the end of the year, which is, what are we going to do long-term with Sam Darnold? I don't think they'll be any closer to the end of the year to having an answer to that because of the struggles for this team. How did they get here?
Well, you can look, and a lot of people say that there were a number of mistakes, and I don't really agree with that. I think that there was one mistake, and everything that followed was a consequence of that mistake, and that was after the 2018 season. The Jets fired Todd Bowles and not Mike Maccagnan. Both of them had been with the team for 4 years, and it was a very unsuccessful four-year run. And for whatever reason, the Jets kept Maccagnan aboard, and they let him have a – He's not the one who made the final decision. It was owner Christopher Johnson who made the final decision. But Maccagnan held sway over the head coaching search that led to Adam Gase. They were reportedly close to hiring Matt Rhule from Baylor, who's now the Panthers head coach. But Maccagnan wanted to have say over Matt Rhule's coaching staff, and Rhule did not want it. So you've created the situation where you have a general manager, so no coach who is going to have the gravitas to demand personnel, say over personnel, is going to be interested in the job. You don't end up with Matt Rhule because Mike Maccagnan wants sway over the coaching staff, so you end up with a guy who was really kind of a third-tier candidate in Adam Gase, and not even a guy the Jets really wanted that badly. Gase was just the one guy who would accept the conditions on the job. And then Maccagnan, with all the cap space the Jets had, went out and was allowed to spend $120 million guaranteed money in free agency, set an NFL record for free agent spending, did not spend it efficiently, focused at the linebacker position at C.J. Mosley, neglected the offensive line, which really came back to hurt this team, essentially set the roster for 2 years. And then after all of this, the Jets decided to fire him because Chris Johnson did what he called a deep dive. And the point that I always make is, this is not really, we're not really talking about the NFL. In any business, if you're the CEO, would you ever let a guy spend $120 million of the company's money without first examining how good the guy was at his job? But that's what the Jets did. And Adam Gase was reportedly the driving force behind Maccagnan's firing. So you created a dysfunctional organization. The team was not built well. The roster was essentially set for 2 years. And it's the poor roster that you've seen right now. And you ended up with a coach that's not that good. So I think ultimately all of these issues can be traced back to one decision that was pretty obvious at the time. The Jets should have fired Mike Maccagnan after the 2018 season because they entered that offseason with a lot of cap space. They had Sam Darnold, who still had 3 inexpensive years left on his rookie contract. Yet it was at the time it would have been a pretty attractive job. You would have had a blank slate. You would have had the pieces to build around him. And the Jets essentially squandered all those resources.
John, as I look at the roster entering this game, you've mentioned Le'Veon Bell will not be a part of this. Obviously, he was cut earlier this week. The Jets stunned with their announcement of cutting him on Tuesday night. Joe Flacco starting at quarterback. If you're in the Miami Dolphins coaching staff and you've seen every play that the Jets have taken this year, who's one name on either side of the football that you got to put like a gold star next to say, hey, you know, this may be a team that's down, but as we construct our game plan, we want to make sure on the offensive side of the ball, we account for X. And on the defensive side of the ball, we account for Y.
So Mekhi Becton has been really good as a rookie. When the Jets drafted him, I thought he had a lot of potential. I wondered whether he'd be a day one starter, but he's been really good. He's transitioned very well. I thought he had long-term potential. I was not expecting it to be this good this fast. Now, he may miss this game because he's got a shoulder injury and he missed practice on Wednesday. So on the offensive side of the ball, I may change my answer to Jamison Crowder because he's been the one consistent player on the offense this year. Jets have not really gotten anything out of Chris Herndon. He's been a big disappointment. He's taken a big step back this year. The other receivers, I mentioned Perryman, just coming back off injury. You're not sure what you're getting out of him. Mims may not play yet. None of the other receivers have really stood out so far. Frank Gore, I mentioned, you know, his best days are behind him. So I think on offense, it would be Crowder. On defense, I think I'd go with Quinnen Williams, who's second year guy. He was the number one. He was the number three overall pick back in 2019 for the Jets, and he's been inconsistent. He hasn't quite been the player the Jets were hoping when they drafted him, but I think you've started to see flashes in recent weeks of him really starting to become a disruptive force. And Jets don't have a lot of great pieces on defense either. The edge rush spot is barren. The corner position is a mess. Linebacker, you don't have C.J. Mosley this year because he opted out. At safety, you don't have Jamal Adams anymore. So really on the defense, Quinnen Williams is the one guy who can really be a disruptive force and potentially wreck a game. And again, he's been kind of inconsistent, but I think over the last couple of weeks, you've started to see him maybe start to put the pieces together.
Great stuff. Kyle Krabs, John Butchko, Locked On Dolphins, Locked On Jets. The Locked On crossover series is going to continue with John grilling me about the Dolphins.
Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, but rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
It's Crossover Thursday here on the Locked On Podcast Network. This is John from Locked On Jets speaking with Kyle from Locked On Dolphins. A few weeks earlier than we thought we'd be seeing it, but the Jets traveled to Miami this Sunday for AFC East action against the Miami Dolphins. So, Kyle, it is not Tua time yet in Miami. It sounds like our old friend Ryan Fitzpatrick's playing pretty well for the Dolphins.
Fitz is, he just will not go away. It's really incredible to watch him play. And he's had his Fitz magic and Fitz tragic moments within the past five games this season. New England was not a good game for Ryan. Seattle was not a good game for Ryan. But Buffalo, Jacksonville, and this past week against San Francisco was his best campaign yet this season. He has been, and even when he's down, he's been productive. He continues to be a spark plug. The Dolphins players in the Dolphins media really is trying to grill everybody associated with the Dolphins about Tua Tagovailoa and what that process is going to look like. And anybody you ask, whether it's coaches or players, they have nothing but rave reviews about Ryan Fitzpatrick. So you always understand a guy's not going to be a career journeyman by not having good and bad that kind of ebbs and flows throughout a week-to-week basis. But he is, without a question, the leader of this football team. And if you go back and look at the second half of 2019, and the first five games of 2020, he's playing some of the best ball of his career this late, which is pretty incredible to say.
Now, who are some of his go-to weapons on offense?
Yeah, so Devontae Parker has been the stud of the group, and obviously he had a big breakout in 2019. Was, I think, first amongst AFC wide receivers in receiving yardage. Travis Kelce had more yardage than he did, but as just pure wide receivers, Parker was number one in the AFC. He's the high-volume guy. Preston Williams, the undrafted free agent from 2019 out of Colorado State, had his first career 100-yard receiving game last week against San Francisco, and he was bouncing back and hasn't really looked like himself after tearing his ACL against the Jets in the first game last year. So this San Francisco game for Williams was kind of the first game back. They run a lot of the passing game through Miles Gaskin out of the backfield, working underneath. They run some crosser and mesh concepts and some of their screen concepts. They're still trying to feel out what screen concepts really work for Miami because they're so big on the offensive line. They don't have a lot of guys that can get out into space and really thrive. But if you ask me to go from the top down, Devontae Parker, Mike Gesicki, Preston Williams, Miles Gaskin, those are the guys that are going to see the lion's share. If you run a little bit more zone coverage, you might see a lot of targets for slot receiver Isaiah Ford in the middle of the field. But those two big guys on the outside and that mismatch at tight end is really where Fitz likes to work.
Now, I know last year the Dolphins had some struggles on the offensive line. How does the unit look so far this year?
It is a refreshingly more efficient group as far as the pass protection, and it's improved in the run game too. But John, you've seen in New York the Chan Gailey offense at work, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, statistically speaking, I believe it was 2015, had his best career year with the New York Jets with Chan Gailey, who's now Miami's offensive play caller. And Miami's style of play has really helped kind of mask some of the greenness and rawness of a young offensive line group because the ball is so frequently out of Fitzpatrick's hand very quickly. They've got like a 2.5 second shot clock where that ball is out and it's out on time. And if Fitz doesn't like what he sees, he'll take off and scramble. He'll get it down to the back, but he's not one of these guys that's going to stand in the pocket and try and make too much happen, which really plays into, you know, preventing Fitzpatrick from making poor judgment decisions from a ball security standpoint. So the big thing for the Dolphins offensive line is number 18 overall pick Austin Jackson is on IR. He was put on IR after the Seattle game. He'll be out indefinitely. They're not expecting him to miss the entire season, it sounds like, but they don't have a timetable for his return. And the Dolphins have taken swing tackle Jesse Davis, who'd been starting at right tackle, put him at left tackle, and they have two rookies in Solomon Kinley and Robert Hunt starting on the right side, and they were really, really good together in their first game this past week. So the issue for Miami is sustaining blocks, but because of the speed in which the ball is out of Fitzpatrick's hand, you can definitely see an improvement in the pass protection.
Who are some of the names to know on the defensive side of the ball for the Dolphins?
Yeah, so defensively for the Dolphins, we're still getting a feel for what the identity of the unit is going to look like because Byron Jones missed effectively three full games with a groin injury. He came back against San Francisco and it kind of snapped everybody else in the secondary back to their preferred spots. Xavien Howard has had an interception in three consecutive games. Jones really allowed the complimentary pieces. First-round pick Noah Igbinoghene only took 10 snaps as a complimentary player instead of trying to fill the void of Byron Jones. The linebacker group, Kyle Van Noy, who they signed in free agency, is one of the big standouts. The other one being Andrew Van Ginkle, who is a fifth-round pick from the 2019 draft. He was a JUCO transfer who played 2 years at Wisconsin. And the Dolphins suffered an injury to Vince Beagle in training camp. Van Ginkle has stepped into that role, and he's actually got a little bit more explosiveness to him than what Vince Beagle did. So he's kind of your hybrid linebacker to watch that they could stack or they could work him off the edge. Up front, Emmanuel Ogba has been a really strong presence for the Dolphins on the line of scrimmage over the past three games. He's the one Miami player that if you're looking for someone who's going to win naturally a one-on-one as a pass rush from the Dolphins defensive linemen who play with their hand in the dirt, he's been the guy that's been doing it. So all three levels of the defense kind of have emerging players, and it's really been interesting to watch with all of these new starters for the Dolphins who's settling into place.
At 2-3, what are the expectations there? Do you think the Dolphins can make a run at the playoff spot this year?
I think they can make a run towards 500, and mainly because the Dolphins' schedule from this point until their final four games is much more forgiving than what the first four or five games was for the Dolphins. Obviously, playing New England in week one is a rough draw when the Patriots are unveiling their first new offense in two decades. They did okay as far as bend but don't break, but they gave up 217 rushing yards in that contest. Buffalo Bills in week two, Byron Jones goes down. Josh Allen has been playing at least up until week five at a potential MVP caliber rate with his quality of play. He's been torching teams left and right. They get the Jacksonville win. They play Russell Wilson. And Russell made three or four plays in that game that really ended up being the big difference. And then obviously the big blowout against San Francisco. Miami plays the Jets. They go on the bye. They've got the Rams, which is a tough contest. But then they go Cardinals, Chargers, Broncos, Jets, Bengals. Because of that heart of their schedule, I do think Miami, if they continue to not play down to teams that are banged up or struggling, like a San Francisco 49ers, Miami can kind of position themselves for a 500 record, and with a new playoff spot on each conference, you know, that may be enough to keep them playing relevant football into week 16 or 17.
All right. Well, Kyle, it was great chatting with you, and I'm sure we'll do it again later in the season.
For sure. We're hoping for a good clean game. You know, these rivalry games are always a little snippy, and with all due respect, John, I'm rooting to see Adam Gase take an L, and I know I speak for all of the Dolphins fans out there when we say we're hoping to hand Adam Gase another L and hopefully do you guys a favor and set you guys up for success with leaving no doubt that Adam Gase is not the guy to lead the Jets to the promised land.
Kyle, you would be surprised how many Jets fans are going to be rooting for the Dolphins in this game for just that reason.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it.
That's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy our show, subscribe to it and leave it a good review. Hope you have a good Thursday, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow to close out the week and preview this week 6 game between the Jets and the Dolphins.